At least I should have bothered him just once.
Humans form communities.
And from that diversity comes strength.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
The year is 2024.
The name of the podcast, Babylon 5.
For the first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I am the one who was.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I am the one who will be.
And we're watching Babylon 5 for the first time for you, the one who is.
We are two veteran Star Trek podcasters who have never seen this show before, and we took it upon ourselves to watch this show, but to help the conversation along to guide the conversation, we decided to apply those skills we've learned to Star Trek podcasters here to Babylon 5, and we are looking for the important messages that Babylon 5 is delivering in its own unique way.
It's really the Babylon 5 messages that we're looking for. Used to be the Star Trek messages, now it's the Babylon 5 messages, and this isn't a Star Trek podcast, and so we play a game called The Rule of Three. That game limits us to no more than three references to Star Trek per episode.
That's it. Three.
Uno, dos, tres. No substitutions, exchanges, or refunds.
Yes, and just to be clear, that is three references total, not each. And if we make one of those references, the sound you're going to hear is...
Gotta love it.
Yeah. Because as we say, while we are definitely not a Star Trek podcast, because it's in the title, those references are bound to slip in, or be jammed in, however you want to look at it. And this is just part of the game we play to have fun while we record. You know what else we do to have fun while we record, Jeff?
What's that?
Well, at the end of the show, we take a chance to predict what next week's episode is going to be about based on title alone. This is the spot of the show, Jeff, where we look back at last week and try to see how right we were. And it is time to
pay the piper.
Yes, time to pay the piper. Jeff, what did you say this episode in the Kingdom of the Blind was going to be about? And we'll talk about how close you were.
This is going to be the first shots fired in the telepath war. Byron's going to go public with his manifesto and the demands that will start drawing the battle lines.
I'm going to give you 40% on this one. Because if you say first shots, the whole thing where they're going and getting people's secrets and then holding that like to extort them over the whole deal. There wasn't really a manifesto, but there was definitely demands. You were
in that vein. I'm going to give it to you. 40%. Nice. What'd you think?
Well, I said that it was definitely time to get back to the telepaths. I said Byron would be solidifying and consolidating his power, and the Kingdom of the Blind was sort of a metaphor for the telepath group. But mostly the episode would just be about him gathering power, bringing more and more telepaths to the station, and the Babylon 5 authorities are going to regret allowing them to stay in the first place.
I think I'm in the same 40%-ish range, because he definitely was, I wouldn't say gathering his forces, but bolstering them. And the station leadership is definitely regretting their decision on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Well, Jeff, that's what we thought the episode was going to be about. But for the folks who are listening at home who maybe didn't watch this episode before listening to us, or maybe they've never seen the episode ever, why don't you take a few moments and tell us what the episode was actually about?
Citizen Jakar, become Orator Jakar, has now become Servant Jakar, leaning all in into his role as Londo's bodyguard because we are finally on Centauri Prime. And while the war is over, the Narns have been liberated and Kartagi has been killed, things really aren't all that different at the royal court. Everybody's still racist as ever, and intrigue is the name of the game. Some pompous minister even offers Jakar the guard that whipped him for Kartagia. Jakar was the bigger man, though, and released the guard. But all of this to say that things are no bueno back home for Londo. And they honestly aren't so good back on Babylon 5 either. Unknown ships are attacking Alliance shipping lanes with military precision. Not raiders, mind you. They're blowing ships up, cargo and all. No survivors, no witnesses. We hear a lot of hemming and hawing from Delenn and Sheridan on this, knowing that the Alliance worlds will be upset when they hear about it, but we don't really get any of that. Just their gnashing of teeth, and a very clear power differential between Earth and Minbar and the other Alliance worlds. Now, what's shocking about these attacks that we learn at the end of this episode is that it's Centauri ships doing the attacking. But how could this possibly happen? I mean, the Centauri are still focused on their hubris and their racism. Plus, they have the strong leadership of their regent emperor. Or do they? Seems he's been drinking a lot. And he was a teetotaler when Londo last saw him. He wanders the halls, mumbling, and even asked a guard to kill him this one time. After some palace intrigue, Londo finally meets with him face to face. He's hard to understand, speaking almost in riddle and half statements. But ultimately, I think he's trying to tell Londo that they like him and think he has a lot in common with them. Soon he'll understand, but until then, he should live life to the fullest, because pretty soon he won't be able to. On his way to that meeting, a minister tried to kill him, but some alien that I don't think we've ever seen before somehow stops the knife and hurls it at that minister, killing him. And after Londo leaves the regent, there's another alien that we haven't seen before. This one makes that keeper-controller thing that we know is on the regent that we saw, I don't know, 1,000 years ago or something like that, makes that thing wrap around and choke him. It looks like Londo's got some dark days in front of him, and he seems to know it, as he decides that he and Jakar are heading back to Babylon 5 on the first transport out of here. Hopefully things are going well on Babylon 5, though. You see, our buddy Byron, he's stringing together some, well, questionable logic to justify the ultimatum he's about to drop on the Alliance. Give us our own homeworld, or we're going to share all of your secrets. Just as Sheridan is considering actually making the deal, some of the telepaths decide to show them they mean business, and they attack some Drazi. Byron and the Teeps that are choosing to stick around seal themselves in their little chamber, while Zack gets on a loudspeaker giving them one last chance to be reasonable, turn themselves in. I don't think that's going to happen, though, as Byron tells Leta that he's going to have to ask something really big of her to get them through this. Brent, what did you see in the Kingdom of the Blind?
Jeff, this was an episode that sent me through a range of emotions.
Yeah.
The first emotion was apathy. That entire cold open where Garibaldi's in here, like, the raiders are coming in and doing whatever. It's like, I don't care. Whatever. They tried to build it up as if that was going to be the big thing. Yeah, they didn't really hardly ever come back to that at all. Like, that wasn't the big dun-dun-dun, let's go to opening credits moment that it needed to be. Like, that was a side conversation at best. Could have put in any spot in the middle of the episode. Byron pissed me off. That was my next emotion. Just pissed off. We'll talk about this a little bit more later. Every single one of the presuppositions that he was using were wrong, which made his entire logical flow incorrect and wrong. And then I got disappointed. I was disappointed in Delenn when she started buying into it and kind of co-signing it. And then I understood, but I kind of got mad at Sheridan for his response to the whole thing. Because, again, we'll talk about this more in detail in a few minutes, but there was a spot of me where it's like, yeah, Byron's completely wrong about everything. However, what would be so bad with actually just saying, you could fix the whole thing by just going, you know what, if that's really what you want, it actually kind of makes sense, the request does, let's help you get it. Let's work through the proper channels and actually help you get it, because it makes sense, we should do that, rather than just shutting it down. So, oh, you're too far out of line. Byron was out of line when he said, I'm not going to talk about the thing I said I was going to talk about. That's when he was out of line. Not for what he actually said. Anyway, so there was those emotions. And then there was the Londo stuff. And the emotions for the Londo stuff were, this is compelling. This is the storyline I want to see. This is where I want to go. And my God, I really, really hope that this is not leading us towards what we saw in The War Without End. Because what we've known since Signs Importance is the future is not set in stone. The future can be changed. And I desperately don't want to see Londo drunk with an eyeball on his neck, although I'm sure that's where it's going, telling Sheridan of how bad he is and blaming stuff and just doing that to get him out and then sacrificing himself at Jakar's hands and they choke each other out. Like, I want that to not be where this is going. range of emotions, Jeff. Range of emotions. But really, if every episode was just about Londo and the Centauri from now on, I'd be great with that. And just jettison the whole Byron thing. Because it just, I just hate it at this point. How about you?
I love that this was almost a direct answer to our conversation 2 weeks ago. Right? Jakar almost doesn't... as if
last week's episode should have been viewed not last week.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit that justifies that viewing order thing. We're not going to talk about viewing order, but we talked about who pays, right? And Jakar doesn't want to punish the guard who whipped him, not anybody, because those deserving of punishment are already dead. I love that we got an answer to a thing we spent a lot of time talking about. Like you, I loved the stuff on Centauri Prime. It felt like we were watching Babylon 5 again.
Yeah. The stuff that was not happening on Babylon 5 felt more Babylon 5 than the stuff that was happening on Babylon 5.
Totally.
Tweet that out. Jeez.
But these are the threads that they left laying around back in the fourth season that we've been waiting this whole time for them to pick up. We know that the Regent has this controller guy on him. We're pretty sure Londo's going to have it too. We know that the Dark Minions, based on War Without End, right? We know they're going to lay waste to the sent to the planet. We're seeing the seeds get sown for that. But just like you said, and again in War Without End, signs and portents, War Without End, they showed us that the future can be changed. We saw a future, Babylon 5 getting blowed up back in season 1. And then in season 3, we saw Ivanova, you know, freaking out and the station about to blow. We saw all that happen and none of it happened. So there's hope. There's hope. What I am excited about, though, is last season we saw the Drock, and that was humiliating to even sit and watch when that happened. And now we have two other groups, so maybe we never have to see that again. But we're getting those Dark Minions and the allies of the shadows. Like, I don't know. It's exciting and it's cool. I, just like you, I hated the Byron and the Sheridan and Alliance stuff. I was watching the scene, a couple scenes with Sheridan, and my thought was, and oh man, I don't know if I want to, I wrote it. I don't know if I want to say it. I feel like the writing has dropped off precipitously in this series. Like low hanging fruit, lowest common denominator, just tropey writing. And for me, the coup de grace, the moment where I was just like, are they even trying anymore? Was when Sheridan sat there and he said, word for word, what President Luchenko said. I did it the wrong way. The inconvenient way. Really? Like, we're not even going to allude to the callback to the president and him. We're just going to word for word say it? Ah, I felt so weak. So weak.
Jeff, I did not pull this clip in, because I would have pulled this as a clip in if I'd known you were going to say that. I didn't even make a note in my notes. I'm full disclosure. We are recording this about an hour after I watched the episode.
Yeah.
Like, this is back to back. I've only ever seen the episode once. I just watched it. It's the way the week's going for me. I haven't even edited the Brent Watches video yet. So this part might not even make it into the YouTube version. So it's very possible the only people who have seen this part are the people who have seen this on YouTube or on Patreon, who get the unedited behind the scenes version. I said the same thing. I did. Cause I was like, this feels like a sin to say. But is JMS even trying?
Yeah.
Right now? It doesn't feel like he's even trying with this whole thing. Like, some of the writing, some of the stuff has just been so bad. And I feel dirty saying that, because we hold JMS in such high regard.
Four seasons of brilliance. I mean, brilliance.
Yeah.
And I haven't had the words, and it was the moment those words came out of his mouth where it just hit me, and I'm just like, exactly, is he even trying? Are we just phoning this in?
It just doesn't, I don't know what to make of the whole thing. Like, the only thing is he's trying to put the pieces in place, move the chess pieces around so that he can deliver this big punch in the back end of season 5. That's what I'm hoping for. My hope feels like it's getting dashed on the rocks as each day goes by.
It's dwindling fast. We're almost halfway through the season.
That's a lot of season left, but still, I'm with you.
I think, and I had this in my notes here, we can kind of pivot from this into the conversation, but it's more on just this weak writing. Because I think he had this idea of the telepath war and what it was going to be. And I think it involved a group of telepaths coming to Babylon 5, wanting a home world, looking for some sort of a retribution. I think those core fundamental story pieces were there for him, but I don't know if it was the timing.
Can I finish that statement for you?
Yeah.
But once he started fleshing it out, it just didn't work. He had the idea, sounded really good. Once he started fleshing it out, it was just like, yeah, it doesn't really even make sense.
It doesn't make sense at all.
It just doesn't make sense.
But he was pot committed at that point. You know, he talked about it in the fourth season. It was two of the segments in Deconstruction of Falling Stars were around this decision to bring the telepaths on board. So
yeah,
I got to keep moving with it. But I just like breaking the whole thing down. Vorlons created telepaths over centuries of genetic manipulation to fight their war. Even though some telepaths evolved naturally, Byron says that they, his people, wouldn't be telepaths, even though some evolved naturally, but they wouldn't be telepaths except for the Vorlons. It was the Vorlon genetic manipulation that caused human telepaths to be hunted and caged and controlled. That's not how I remember it. And now that the war is over, they're left abandoned, so they need to run away and have their own home world. It doesn't, like, nothing in that holds up at all in any way. He contradicted himself in his own logic thing, and then he's like, so we're going to go threaten them, we're going to lie to them, but we're not going to have any violence. And the rest of the telepaths are like, the hell we ain't.
Right?
We got clubs over here and everything. It's ridiculous. I'm done with this telepath thing.
And what really disappointed me was when Delenn was like, yeah, they did do this and they did create this for our war and they were created. I'm like, no. Okay, stop. Let's talk about what the telepaths really are. And this is true of every situation out there. Let's just assume they're all partly created by the Vorlon. You know what the telepaths are? They're not a species unto themselves. The human telepaths are humans. The Vorlons gave humans, who were going to be a target eventually of the shadows, a means to defend themselves. That's what happened. Not to go fight their war and be cannon fodder and all that crap. No. That's not what this was. This was, they seeded these telepaths through the galaxy because it's not that they were fighting against the shadows. Remember what the whole conflict was between the shadows and the Vorlons, which maybe we should give Byron a little bit of credit here, Jeff. Byron doesn't know what the whole Vorlon shadow thing was really all about.
That's fair.
Because what the Vorlon shadow thing, it was about how they wanted to help the other races develop. It wasn't, we're fighting just because we're pissed off at each other. It's, they both had a similar mission and just two different ideas of how to make it happen. And was one really more right than the other? That's what their whole deal was. And Byron doesn't know that. He doesn't understand that.
But Delenn does, like you were saying. Delenn does understand that.
That is why I'm so disappointed in her.
And I think what the Fall of Night taught us through Sheridan, Lorianne, was this wasn't our war. This was their war. They've been fighting over millennia and pulling people into, and it was Sheridan having the leadership to say, we're not playing ball anymore. Like it was never our war, but now it is, or it was. And so like Delenn's reasoning falls apart on this too. She was in the space. Like she was there in that thing, telling them to take a hike and go fight your own war and leave us. We're not playing anymore. She and Sheridan were doing that. But then here, well, yeah, maybe, not at all.
I think we're saying the same thing. We're just using different words that sound like they're saying the opposite pieces.
Oh, I'm agreeing with you with what I'm saying, that Delenn was, as mad as I am at Byron, I can totally subscribe to what you're saying. He only knows the propaganda that he's been fed,
yeah,
or the stuff he's heard on the side. Delenn knows it all.
But I mean, what I'm saying, even with the shadows and the Vorlons and their whole war and what that was about, it really wasn't a war. It was how each side wanted to help people in the universe
evolve, grow.
That's all it was. And they just had two different ideas. They eventually got into a fight and they'd had several fights before, but it's because the people were the ones who were responding back. The Vorlons came in and helped the people fight. The Vorlons didn't do the fighting as often as much as they helped the people learn how to fight. Like, to me, that's more of an equivalent of, hey, these people are coming in to raid us and do something that we don't think is, or these people are going to go raid these other people over here. So we're going to go teach them how to fight. We're going to prepare them how to fight. We're going to equip them and give them the weapons that they need in order to make that fight over there. That's more of what I feel like the fight has been over the millennia. And eventually the Vorlons just flipped their lid and said, fine, we're going to go fight ourselves. And then we got that whole thing in, you know, the end of the age or whatever.
I think it would have been better. Literally in the Fall of Night, there could have been one single scene in that episode over a season ago that would have lent a little bit of this. Show us a group of telepaths, ideally a multiracial group. So Minbari, maybe some Centauri, but mostly Minbari and humans in there. Show them like in a room on a White Star and doing telepathy and watch one or two shadow ships crumple, but then like watch them bleed from their eyes and noses and drop down. You know, like show that they sacrificed themselves in that conflict in some way. But what we know literally is Sheridan went out and did a test with Leeta and Bester, and they said, wow, we have a secret weapon. And that was the end of the story. So like really what Byron's mad about isn't even fighting someone else's war. It's being used in one test scenario and then being held at bay.
And then we use the other ones for the Earth Civil War to end the Civil War. But again, even with that, those telepaths were humans.
Yeah.
They're just genetically modified humans. You're still a human. It's still your Civil War. The shadows and the Vorlon are still coming for you. It's not like you're just ants in the game being tried, which I know is what Sheridan was trying to say. Like that's what it became in the end. Mm-hmm. That's not what it was until the end. With all that. So I just, the whole thing's awful. Now here's the thing. If Byron would have come in and actually worked this on the other level, hey, we're humans. We do this, but we were genetically modified. We have been, and some of us evolved naturally, but whatever, things aren't working out for us on Earth. Life sucks on Earth as a telepath because we're hunted down, Psi-Corp, all that sort of stuff. And we have a different set of needs. They have a different way of living. How much they have to shut down of themselves. They talk about this just to walk around day to day. And they have no other place to go. Like, so they want their own home world so they can go and live life as they need to without having to do all of that. They have a different set of needs that they're going to have a different culture. They're going to have a different set of laws that govern what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do. And you know who needs to be the people to create, foster, and enforce all of that? Themselves.
Yeah.
So the idea that they get their own home world actually makes a lot of sense. Like their request is not out of bounds.
No.
And that's where I get disappointed at Sheridan in all of this. Like this is out of line coming in here and asking for it. Well, yeah, it is out of line. You should have been shut down the moment you said, I'm not talking about the thing I said I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we're stopping you right now because we don't have, this is not how we do this. And you're not going to just come in here and take this over, but they let him speak anyway. And that's really where Sheridan should have been like, even after Delenn said her stupid thing that she said, Sheridan should have just been like, you know what? They are doing it the wrong way. Quote the Earth president, interim Earth president. Is she still interim at this point? Do we know?
No idea.
Yeah. See, again, lost storylines that they weren't focusing on. Anyway, to just back and say, this is where Sheridan could have been the bigger man. This is where the message could have come from. Humanity of like, listen, you're doing this in just absolutely the wrong way, but you do have a point. Let's actually, you know how we can fix, you know, we can fix this, Byron, instead of doing it the way that you're wanting to do it. Let's actually work on it. Let's agree that this is something that should happen. Let's begin to work through these phases. There's apparently all these worlds out there that are uninhabited. That
go
are
go to Zaha Doom. Go live on Zaha Doom.
Oh, Zaha Doom's blown up right now.
That's still a rock. Go there. You know,
something out there, right?
Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, but they said there are these worlds out there that have little value to the thing. Now, do you just walk? Hey, listen, you got this world here. Doesn't mean anything to you, so we're just gonna go live there. You can't just do that. But you can begin those negotiations with folks and say, hey, we're gonna carve out this space. And we're going to allow them to be there. You know, do you agree to do that? Hey, by the way, do you know why Washington, D.C. is shaped the way it's shaped? Huh. Have you ever looked at it? If you go look at it, like half of the sides are like real straight lines, and then the other half isn't straight lines.
Okay.
Because apparently what had happened was it was supposed to be shaped like a diamond, and only Maryland gave up the portion of their land to be the diamond, and Virginia said nope. And so the squiggly line is like the river. Like, that's why Washington D.C., because it should have actually been this other side of Virginia, but they reneged on their part of the deal. Huh. Apparently that's what happened. I don't know if that's true or not, but it seems true to me. But my point being, you go to these worlds and you say, hey, let's find a place where we can put these guys and just let them be. Give them their space. Let them be. Hey, Telepaz, you guys want to go do this? So we're going to have to buy this for you. You know? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen, maybe we come in and help out with that. You guys figure that out. Like, this is all part of it. But the point is, let's get you the thing you want, because it makes sense. And by the way, life sucks for you at home with Psycor and all that kind of stuff. And we don't want you around any either, because it's kind of dangerous having you around.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there. And to be fair, right, you don't want to SETI Alpha 5 them, where you just dump them and leave them, but you go dump them and you make them a part of your greater
society.
Yep. Interstellar Alliance. I don't know if it's sovereignty. I don't know what it is, but you make them part of the thing, but let them go live their thing.
Yeah. And let them be a part of the greater thing. I said in the Brent Watches video, don't let them into the Alliance, but that's just because I was kind of pissed off at them. But no, you let them into let them value that diversity that they have. And by the way, you can then, for Earth anyway, you can put it, hey, listen, when you guys come here, here are the rules. Can't be reading people's minds. You can't do this. You can't do that. We're going to have ambassadors here. We're going to have this. But over there, you can guys go live whatever your rules are over there.
Do your thing. I got to hit this real quick.
This makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah.
You know, but no, Byron's got to go in there and be all like, you owe us.
Well, there were multiple, and I'm going to talk about this honestly in the wrap up for it, but there were multiple opportunities for Byron and Sheridan both to stop and say a thing, and everything could have gone differently on this one. And they both failed time and time again.
Yeah. I have one last thought on the whole Byron thing, and then I'm ready to him. Well, two. Byron's trying to be like Gandhi, and he's really bad at it.
So bad.
He's so bad at it. He says this one line. He's like, the longer it takes for them to reach us, the more chance we have to negotiate. Dude, Byron's not trying to even negotiate in the first place. He's trying to extort.
He's had an ultimatum and he's pushed him up against a wall. And no, they're not going to be easy to negotiate. There's no public sentiment that's going to go your way. You have painted yourself as the enemy.
Yep.
Period.
Yep. You just killed any chance that you had of actually a diplomatic solution to this. Also, I never ever in my life needed to see Byron's nipple.
No,
I'm sorry. I just didn't need to. Okay. Here's what I was really going to say. Byron talks about being grown in a laboratory and yeah, or he has that idea. I don't think he said those exact words, but you know, we were modified. We were changed. We wouldn't be here and this and that, and that. There's a phrase I say, I think I've said it on the show before, maybe not, but if not, I'm going to bring it back because it reminds me here. Byron's being offended. He's choosing offense. And here's the thing. Offense is chosen 100% of the time.
Yep.
Offense is chosen. It never just happens to you. You never just go, oh, where'd that come from? I got offended. No, you hear something, you think about it, you go, wait, what? Oh, I am offended. You thought about it. You rolled it through your head and you made a choice to be offended. If you make a choice to be offended, you can also make the choice to not be offended. Byron is choosing offense here. He's picking it. And it's leading to, honestly, a really bad decision that should doom any chance of actually accomplishing the goal that he wants to accomplish.
He's choosing opposition, right? And oh man, this is probably a really bad, I know this is a bad example for a lot of our viewers and listeners out there, but it's so on the nose. And I think about all of the union negotiations that have gone on in the last year that have not gone well. And there's some of them that have not gone well because, well, you know, management or whatever, legislators or whomever the deciding bodies are just not showing up and playing ball, board of directors, whatever. Like most of them are that. Mm-hmm. But there's a handful where the union and the management sides actually want the same things. It's just negotiating out the details of it. And one of the two sides, if not both of them, decide, hey, instead of coming together and talking about this and working through it, we're going to oppose this proposal that's been made. We're going to fight. When we fight, we win. Like, that's a chant I've heard over and over. I heard it with my employers. They were outside our state capitol. When we fight, we win. And it's like, when you fight, someone loses and the other person doesn't lose. No one's necessarily winning. What if we worked together? What if you, to your, like, I love your the example there. What if instead of choosing offense, you chose collaboration?
Yep.
It's a choice.
Yep. This is where the Star Trek message is needed, is here. Yeah. This is the message that needs to be delivered. This is why we need Star Trek and what Star Trek teaches us, which is we're going to work together to make this happen.
Yeah. And spoiler alert, we are going to talk about this in the Babylon 5 message part of this episode some. So, but from a different perspective.
There you go. I like it.
I don't have a lot on the attacks thing.
I'm sorry. One more thing on the attacks thing.
The attacks on the Alliance shipping lanes.
It mattered nothing. It mattered absolutely nothing. I before you go to that though, I have a Sheridan note. Mm. You know what Sheridan's big mistake was in this episode? It wasn't to allow the colony to exist on Babylon 5, which is what everybody, oh, we should, never should have let them come. Never should. That wasn't his mistake. You know what his mistake was to withdraw his protection.
Do you think?
I think that was a bad mistake on his part. He brought them here. He gave them protection. And without consulting, without warning, without anything, he just says, nope, I'm going to withdraw. Go get them. And that's not okay. And that is the thing that's going to push those telepaths to violence, is because now they're actually being hunted. You told us we were going to be safe here, and now we're not. And now we actually have to fight back. That's going to be the thing that draws this telepath war and pushes this telepath war to that. It's not that, I think Sheridan actually did the exact right thing by allowing them to be on the station to, maybe his reasoning was off. Wouldn't it be nice to have them on our side when stuff erupts with Bester and Psycor? Sure.
But here's the thing. He let them on board with that justification, and then did nothing to foster them being on their side.
Yep.
They were othered immediately. They were sent to the grossest part of the station. They weren't, I mean, it's just, they were, it was not a good situation from go. And I'm going to take this conversation, slap a pin in it, because this is exactly where my White Stars conversation goes, is to this point that we hit right here.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, and stop me if this is where you're also going. Didn't Byron and the telepath say, listen, we're going to earn our keep here. They brother Theo'd it, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We're going to earn our keep. We're going to do all this kind of stuff. And well, that whole piece just got dropped.
We even got the piece. Hey, these telepaths have been working with you, Garibaldi. They've been great. They've been giving us value this whole time. These two that have been working for you. Yeah, we'll get to all that here shortly.
And talk about Londo.
I think the only thing I want to hit on the shipping lanes attacks.
Oh yeah, that thing. Sorry.
And it's not even about the shipping lanes attacks. It's about how the Alliance works. So you've got Earth and Minbar, mm-hmm. and then everyone else.
Okay.
I don't get that. How is this different than the League? At the League, you had your big five, your big six with the Vorlons. And then everybody else. Now you've got two. It's they get the reports, and I get that. She's in Tilza, so she's going to get the reports. He's president, so he's going to see things. But why was it Garibaldi in the room and not a Hayek or a Brikiri or a Vree or somebody else? Like, why are they the controllers of all things? I feel like this alliance thing is just a dressed up, gussied up version of the League, but with one central leader.
Well, frankly, Jeff, I think this goes back to what you were saying earlier about the laziness of the writing, because this is not what the alliance was supposed to be at the end of season four.
Nope.
But now we've got to go in and do some stuff. And, you know, I regret saying that word. I don't think it's laziness. It might be. I don't think JMS is coming in here being lazy about what he's doing. I don't know if he's just distracted at this point. Like, I got to imagine that it sucks to, like, hey, I've pushed all my pieces together. I pushed everything into the pot for the end of season four. And hey, now we get a chance to do some other stuff. And oh crap, he's got to restart it. At this point, he's had 9 episodes. He's had 9 episodes to restart it and really kick it down the lane. And I know what people are saying out there. Well, he has kicked it down. No, it's not. We're still kind of. You said it the other day, Jeff. Do what you did with the Minbari Civil War. As soon as you realize that the telepath thing isn't working, give it an episode, wrap it up, and let's move on to another storyline. Because the Londo one is the beast.
It's so good. And it started out so awesome with just Jakar just reveling in the racism.
Jeff, let me ask you a question. Do you think that's the part of the episode that JMS actually had fun writing?
I think so.
And the rest of it wasn't? Like, yeah.
You know what I know? Episodes like the last couple, we've seen this in the comments, episodes like the King Arthur one, like, we didn't have fun recording those episodes, and people didn't really have fun watching them. We didn't bring the energy for some of those, and we haven't in the last couple weeks. I think that's what happened here. JMS brought the energy to these scenes, and they were great. The writing had punch.
Londo walking into the court with Jakar on his side, and everybody's like, oh, you brought your own entertainment. Let's do something where we put him in chains in a cell. And Londo's like, no, he's my bodyguard. What?
Huh. Jakar just leaned. I felt like he, that whole flight, the whole like transport ride over, he's just like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to say this.
When he asked that dude what time dinner was, it's so great.
Great.
The dude playing the regent, Vendrizi or whatever his name mm-hmm. is. I mean, he was a hoot to watch just in the two times that we saw him before now. But I mean, drunk Vendrizi is the best Vendrizi. Like, you know, like he is so good at playing this crazy psychopathic, makes no sense kind of a guy. Like, you know who he reminds me of a little bit? You know who Emo Phillips was?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, oh.
It's 100% who he reminds me of is Emo Phillips. If you guys don't know who Emo Phillips is, he's a comedian that was mostly in, I think, the 70s and 80s, a little bit through the 90s.
Yeah.
Go check out his stuff. It's very weird. It's very off-putting. But when you understand what's really going on, it's hilarious.
The Regent, Verini, Vendrizi are the they're the exogenesis aliens. So still a Babylon 5.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Verini.
Verini.
Okay, thank you.
But
delete your comments now. We got it. We corrected it. Go ahead.
It's fine. I let him run for a sec. But no, he was so great because he had that tortured feeling, you know. And what I loved about these scenes is that we know what's up and no one else does. But I think, again, like, if I had not watched Babylon 5 until it was on TNT and I popped in at this moment, I know something's up. He kept messing with his shoulder a little bit. He kept looking around the hole. If it was my decision, you would never be hurt and no one would ever kill you. If it was my decision, bam!
But it's not.
He just, it was just that. A guy who has clearly been pushed over the edge and won't, like, he's falling, but they're not, it's not letting him hit. You know, he's just, when am I going to die? Please, please. And it's not happening. It's excellent. Mm-hmm. The minister guy who tried to kill Londo.
The old guy. Yeah.
I'm guessing he's the guy who probably tried to blow up his ship. couple episodes ago.
Sure. I've got designs. I've got plans. I said my first two notes of the show, Londo just does not want to be here walking into that. And then Londo's getting shivved. Everything about from the dude who was making fun of Jakar to the old dude you were just talking about, like these guys are going to kill Londo. They're 1,000% going to try to kill Londo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would you ever want this job? And now, you know what? We were right. And turns out they both tried to kill Londo, as they showed us later in the show. You know, they were both a part of it. I was a little shocked to see Londo go through the, I was expecting that was the Drock, right?
I don't think so.
They killed the dude. They killed Jono. So. By the way, I like Jono. I wish we would have got a lot more Jono.
Same. My note. Exactly. Jono, who I really liked, gives Londo the skinny and gets killed. Regent has to watch. Then it gets set up to look like an Epstein. A suicide. But yeah, he was great. And I loved he even had the Centauri eyebrows. He was a very reasonable guy. I loved how they introduced that whole concept of lying about logistics and stuff through him. Like, that's a good dude right there.
Yeah. And why lie about the logistics? Like, why turn all these things top secret? That it's just what are they up to even make that happen? I don't understand why they would even do that.
If I look ahead, 17 years to war without end, what we know is there's going to be fire and explosions and starvation and sickness and all this stuff. So the dark minions are diverting supplies somewhere else and not getting them to the homeworld.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so they got to cover that up and in order to keep their guy in power. Hey, by the way, you know who their guy is?
Londo.
Their guy's Londo. Yeah. They really like Londo. He's one of them, he said. He's like them. And I'm like, maybe you don't know Londo, or maybe you really do.
But yeah, you asked if I thought that was the Drock.
Yeah.
And I feel like we saw two different aliens. We saw the one who telekinesis'd the knife, I guess, or something.
See, that's what I thought the Drock were. Like the ones who came out of the shadows and killed Jono that we didn't actually see.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who came out of the shadow to save Londo and flip the knife around and go back. I thought that was the Drock.
Because the Drock had that weird movie phasey thing and couldn't quite grab onto things when they were on the White Star. This guy that was standing there looked pretty stable. He looked pretty badass, but I didn't get the Drock vibe. I got like assassin suit sort of a thing. And then there was the guy, we got the face in the dark that Verini was like, I didn't tell them anything.
I thought that was the same guy.
Really?
I thought all of that was the same. You know, you first we didn't see him, and then we got a little bit of a further way, and then we got like a close up on him, and it was all the same person.
The one that did the knife thing had some sort of a mask or a suit or something on, but it could be the same guy in there. But I'm confused. I'll just say this now, and please do not answer this question. It'll get answered for us. But we've heard in Rising Star, and then again in Deconstruction of Fallen Stars, we heard about the Drock War. So the Drock are a thing again, but I remember the Drock being very different last season than they were. If this is them, they look very different, which frankly is fine because that was terrible.
So Jakar, let's talk about Jakar on Centauri Prime. Talk to me about your response to him and the whip and the dude who's going to kill him and his whole thing about the hand and the heart and all that sort of stuff.
It was beautiful. It was poetic. I feel like it was written at us based on our conversation 2 weeks ago. How amazing is that, right? Hey, I could whip the heck out of this guy. Might feel kind of good even. He didn't do it. It wasn't him. The guy who did it's dead. He's gone, you know, and so what do we do? And then he gets right in dude's face. I even wrote this one down. Everyone knows the true source of pain is neither the hand nor the heart. It is the mouth. Is it not, Minister? Oh. And we saw that. That's what we saw that we're seeing with Verini and the dark minions. They're causing this pain on Centauri, and it's because of the things he's saying that's happening. We're seeing it with Byron. We're seeing it with Sheridan, Delenn. The things they are saying are causing all this pain and strife. And more importantly, the things they are not saying is causing all of this pain and this strife. I thought that was just brilliant. And I felt like JMS, through the time warp that we share, heard us 2 weeks ago and says, I'll answer your question for you. I got you.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. That, again, this is the part that it felt like JMS was really paying attention to. The other part was just, it's just annoying.
Well, I wonder too, if he had this, when he wrote that scene, Jakar getting whipped, if he already had the scene in The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari and this scene in his head, like he knew this was going to lead to those two moments.
I'll tell you my favorite part of the entire episode.
Okay.
It was a really tiny part, but I loved it. This is one of those parts people would have complained about me missing, and I didn't miss it. Right after Jakar does that whole hand and heart and all mouth and all that kind of stuff.
I know where you're going.
He's leaving. He walks out the room. He looks over at one of the Centauri babes and goes, and she likes it.
She's there for it.
She's 1,000% there for it. Okay, rewind the clock for me, Jeff.
Okay.
We talked a couple weeks ago about seeing Jakar come out in his pajamas, and he didn't have the robe and the chest pieces and all that, which we saw several times in the first season or two, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it always a group of Centauri women leaving his quarters?
It was, yeah.
It wasn't Narn women. It was Centauri women.
Yeah, we thought that one of them, and we know at least one of Londo's wives was included in some of that.
So Jakar is all about those six spots, man.
Right.
And Jakar, buddy. Hey, she was falling for it. It was so funny.
It was.
The look she gave the dude she was standing next to. Oh, my gosh.
He looks at her. She looks at him. Oh, it was so great. That whole scene was amazing.
I have a legitimate major complaint about this episode, though.
Okay.
Londo, Prime Minister, soon to be Emperor, has returned to Centauri Prime. He is in the palace. Do you know who's not in the palace and who should be in the palace?
Would that be Veer Kodo?
Nope. Although I did miss Veer. I did note Veer wasn't in this. Veer is kind of taking this whole stance that Lanier is. Why isn't Veer there? But whatever. No. To Maeve.
Oh, yes.
Maeve is the Empress now or whatever, right? Wife of the Empress, whatever. She should be there. We've seen this whole thing about the wives of the Emperor and all the, that they follow him around and the all that sort of stuff. Where's Tamav? I need some Jane Carr back on the show.
Well, maybe she's on her way. Maybe that was at the end.
Oh, yeah.
When Londo was laying in his little house on the prairie bed and Jakar was laying on the floor covered in drapes or something.
Right. A
throw pillow and curtains. And he's like, I don't want to be here anymore, because he felt a disturbance in the Force. And that disturbance is Tamav making her way to the palace.
Is that pestilence, death, famine? Well, Jeff, I think we have arrived at that spot where it is time to boil this all down and see what messages Babylon 5 is trying to deliver to us, if any, to be honest with you. Jeff, you're going to do that this week. You get to rate this episode on a scale of 0 to 5 white stars. As far as how strong that message is, how good that message is, how uniquely Babylon 5 is that message. What do you got for us this week, Jeff?
We've talked about a lot of this, so I may end up keeping this short because we've already had a bunch of this discussion. But there's a theme emerging here in the fifth season. I think that's a thing we really caught in season 3 with Passing Through Gethsemane. There's a real theme. Season 4 had its theme. Season 5 is coming up with its theme, and that is, who pays the price and how is justice served when the perpetrator is long gone? And maybe it's just the last couple episodes, but it seems to be getting hit on the head pretty hard. We got it with the Vorlons. You know, Byron has to make the Vorlons pay. We have to, the shadows or the dark minions of the shadows now want to make Centauri pay. They wanted to, you know, make the guard that whipped Jakar pay. And all of these things. I think that this is going to be a big theme that comes through. But the real message in this one we talked about was that communication or absence of communication. But nothing came of that in this episode. There it was. This is what did come from this episode, though. Escalation leads to escalation. Byron went from 0 to 60 in a heartbeat. And for our non-United States friends, those of you who use the metric system, 0 to 115 kilometers per hour. I don't know the math, but we just say 0 to 60 miles per hour. It's a thing. But he went in a heartbeat from like, hey,
I think for the record, Jeff, I think the phrasing would still be 0 to 100 in 3 seconds.
Okay.
Like that. I think it still works. You just change the
one number. Down. And it probably would be a number like 100 that makes sense. That is the metric system.
Hey, when you get past this number, you're officially going fast.
Yeah. This is the line. And getting to that number is a big deal. But he went from like, hey, let's come on board and have a colony here so we can get a home world. You know, that'd be cool. To we're taking these suckers down and sharing their secrets and we're gonna burn this whole thing up. We're gonna lock ourselves in and hunger strike in a heartbeat. But what happens in situations like that is the people you're going against often feel they have no choice. That was a theme we talked about in the third season right there. It was no choice, but you always have a choice is the point. But they feel they have no choice and they have to escalate in reaction to that escalation. Byron not communicating with Sheridan, with Delenn, with Zach. At the end, Zach's right there begging them to come out and talk to him. Not doing those things put Sheridan in a position where he felt he had no choice but for him to escalate as well. Byron's actions are just as responsible for Sheridan choosing to pull the protection as Sheridan choosing to pull the protection. They got each other so ramped up, they created this situation. There were opportunities early on for Sheridan, like you said, when Byron did his thing, to just say, hey, this is very interesting. Let's go off of the record and let's go have a conversation about this. Let's talk about what this looks like. See what we can do for you. I have questions, something. Byron had an opportunity when he was down there and they were like, we're going to go beat these suckers up. We got clubs and everything. The minute they didn't listen to him and walked out, he could have been like, boop, 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 boop. Hey, Zach, got some telepaths out to get these people. Can you get there and protect them and make sure they don't do anything stupid? I'm being a good citizen of Babylon 5 and showing that I'm truly nonviolent. He had a chance to open up and say no, but they never did. They never did. And then they started making assumptions, right? You had Sheridan, who was in the moment. He's like, gosh, maybe it does make sense. You know, I mean, we got to get him up here. We got to detain him. We got to somehow control this situation because it's escalated to such a point so we can have a conversation about maybe giving them their home world. And then it's like, nope, we're going all in. The point is, when you don't communicate with each other, bad things happen. I think about Breaking Bad. Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
Yes.
I hated it.
I never finished it, but yes, I've watched it. It was one of those shows I could never watch more than two episodes at a single time before I had to get up and just go like clear my mind. It was such a heavy episode. And I just got to a spot where like, I can't keep putting myself through this. And I know it's fantastic. Everything I've heard about it, it's some of the best TV ever.
It's amazing. Yeah, we finished it. We powered through. That's the thing. It was beautiful. It was great. Amazingly constructed. The acting was world class. But the whole thing, everything in it happened because Walter White refused to tell Skyler, his wife, what was happening. One conversation would have saved countless lives in that situation. Would have saved him getting gunned down at the end of the series. But he just couldn't have the conversation. Couldn't say it because escalation leads to escalation until someone has the courage to stop and say, whoa, let's talk about this. How many times in our relationships do we have this happen, right? Where going along and things are fine and then this happens. And so instead of talking about it, you come back with this. And instead of talking about that, they come back with this and then with this. And then the next thing you know, everything's falling apart and blowing up. When all that had to happen at one point was for someone to say, whoa, I'm feeling this right now and I'd like to talk about it. But we just don't do it. I think this is such a powerful message in this one that led to, I mean, it's going to lead to the telepath war. It's going to be horrible what happens. I'm going to give this one because I think this is wildly intentional and I think it's powerful, but I also don't think it's done. I think this was the introduction of it. I'm going to give this one 3 white stars.
If you had gone any higher, I would fight you over it.
I wouldn't have gone any higher.
You didn't. So I'm going to let it be. Not that I actually have any say in the white stars this week at all. Like I just don't. That's the rules. I don't make them up. I just follow. Actually, yeah, we do make them up. But whatever.
But we have a lot of rules and we do have that whole thing. You don't get to push back on the white stars. And today I'm not going to get to push back on your big responsibility coming up because we are developing the definitive ranking absolutely, objectively, scientifically tested and correct ranking of all the episodes of the fifth season of Babylon 5. And our top five currently there is The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari in the top spot, No Compromises, Learning Curve, A View from the Gallery, and then Day of the Dead. Brent, this is your responsibility this week. Where are you ranking in the Kingdom of the Blind?
Well, it's not going to crack 1, 2, or 3 because I liked 1, 2, and 3.
Agreed.
For as much as we talk about season 5 and we're getting kind of giving season 5 a bunch of crap that it totally deserves, numbers 1, 2, and 3, Long Night of Londo Mollari, No Compromises, and Learning Curve were good episodes. I liked these episodes. So we're not going to break that. I think this is in the top 5, I think. So really I'm looking, do I put it at View from the Gallery or Day of the Dead? I'm just looking at these. Day of the Dead was so good. I had so much to say.
It also had a lot that it didn't say.
It did. It really did. But that one, it was the whole thing with the Hayek and the Hayek dough and all of that. I personally love that one a whole lot. View from the Gallery was an episode that I said was fine, but we just didn't need it. But it was fine. It was a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jeff, I take that back. I don't think this is going to crack our top five. This one is going to slide in right for me, right underneath Day of the Dead. It's right there. It's kind of on the bubble, but I think given the episodes we have there, I'm going to want to watch Day of the Dead before I watch this one again. And but definitely I'm going to watch this one before I watch Paragon of Animals.
Well, it makes sense to me. It reminds me of a Dr. Mario sort of a thing, right? If you remember, Dr. Mario was a Tetris knockoff and you had to have the pills and the colors match up. So you have to have the bottom half of this episode, which are the telepaths, match up to another telepath episode, which is going to put it well outside the top five. So
there you go.
Well, Brent, that's it for In the Kingdom of the Blind. Next week, we're watching A Tragedy of Telepaths for the first time.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, more telepaths.
What? Oh, my word.
Never seen these episodes before. We only know the title, and you can tell right there. That's the, I think the first Brent has heard it. We don't look at thumbnails or anything, and the fun game we like to play is guessing the next episode, what's going to happen in it, based on the title alone. So, Brent, A Tragedy of Telepaths. What does it hold for us?
You know what? I'm gonna go out on a limb here. The telepaths have locked themselves in the down below area. Like they're in their little thing, their siege bunker.
Mm-hmm.
We saw them do that. I think they're down there. I think Sheridan or Babylon 5 or whoever, they reach out and Bester arrives on the station to try to break it up, to try to get in there, to try to be the guy. And I think this is a tragedy of telepaths. I'm hoping beyond hope. This is the end of the telepath war, that they come in, they all die. The whole lot of them die. And I'm only hoping that because that would be the end of the war. And I'm hoping, and that it becomes, it ramps up to this whole like Psycor versus these guys where they're trying to do whatever. And it's just like, and it's one of those, it's like the Alamo, like it's not even really a fight at all. So that's what I'm going with.
We're pretty darn close on this one.
Okay.
So I think that, well, first off, I hear Tragedy of Telepaths and I think like Murder of Crows, you know, or something like, ooh, is this a number of telepaths coming together? But I think that it's going to be. But what's the number, you know? But I have the almost the same outcome, except
what do you call a group of lions?
It's pride of lions, right?
A group of fish is a school. What do you call a group of telepaths? A tragedy.
Uh-huh. But I think that these things are going to start getting out of hand. Byron and his crew are going to be making more noise and whatever. And Lockley specifically, because we established that Lockley and Bester are on pretty good terms. And so she's going to call up and be like, hey, remember those telepaths are there? They're ready. They're ready for you. We got them.
Oh, because they're supposed to. Yeah, it's like supposed to be like so many days, right?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't even think about. I thought Sheridan calling Bester, but yeah, Lockley makes way more sense than Sheridan.
Yeah, that's why they established the relationship. I think is so she could make a friendly call, and I think the fun Babylon 5 spin on all of this, and I'm here for it, is Bester and Psycor are going to be the good guys in this whole thing.
Except I see this. This is called the War of the Telepaths. I really almost see this as not actually like it's called a war, but it's not really a war. This is going to be a shellacking.
Yeah.
And all, I mean, what was that episode where JMS killed a kid?
Which one?
No, the one where they, remember they all locked themselves into, it was the Markab, where they locked themselves into the room, and then Lanier and Delenn were the only two literally left standing.
Yeah, Confessions and Lamentations. I was going to say, he kills a kid at least once a season, it seems.
Oh my gosh. It's going to be that level of destruction of the telepaths, and I'm only rejoicing because that means it's the end of Byron.
I sure hope it is, and we're going to find out next week. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Leave us a review and share this podcast, you know? Let people know about this show. Somebody who loves Babylon 5 already, somebody who's about to fall in love with it, let them know there's this great show called Babylon 5 for the first time. The share button is right there on whatever app you're using, from YouTube to Apple to Good Pods and everything in between. So, Brent, until next time.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up?
I did actually have a couple more notes on Byron. Can I get them in real quick?
Nope. We're getting the hell out of here.
Initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.
We're not some deep space franchise. This station is about something.
And I think Jeff totally overrated this thing on White Stars. Like, he said that he said that all that was deliberate. I don't think it was deliberate at all, but it's his call this week. So anyway.